Kachuk. Wade shoots. Scores. It's over. Good night. The Memorial Cup now belongs to the London Knights. The London Knights, the hottest team in hockey, have won 17 in a row, and that's good enough to call themselves MasterCard Memorial Cup champs.
Welcome to Junior, Sportsnet CHL podcast with your host, Jeff Merrick.
And in the end, it was London, making their fourth trip in five seasons to the MasterCard Memorial Cup. The Knights blew the field away in the round robin, highlighted by a 9-1 pasting the champions from the Western Hockey League, the Brandon Wheat Kings. Mitch Marner, Maple Leafs prospect, he made headlines all series long, racking up 13 points in three games before the final, flirting with the single-season tournament record of 16. His line mates, they were a story as well. Arizona Coyotes prospect Christian Dvorak, he already looks pro-polished, and their left winger Matthew Tkachuk is poised to become maybe a top five pick in this year's NHL draft. Tkachuk, of course, this scoring the championship-winning goal. Son of former NHLer Keith Tkachuk played with a heavy heart all playoff long. His billet mom passed away just before the playoffs were getting going in the OHL. That line put up 344 points in the regular season, 119 more in the playoffs, and 34 in the Memorial Cup. The play of that line was staggering. Fans couldn't remember a time that a single line did as much damage as they did, both on the power play and on 5-on-5. In tight, around the net, this tournament has never seen a better short pass game than what we saw on display with Marner, Dvorak, and Tkachuk. But it wasn't all just that line. Secondary threats on the second line with a pair of draft eligibles, Cliff Poo and Max Jones. And on their right side, overager Aaron Berisha, who played his last game in junior hockey this past weekend and went out a champion. And on the back end, Olio Levy. That's a name we'll hear called early at the draft. He stood out, as did overager Jacob Graves. He should probably find a pro deal after this season. The giant Chris Martinet, who Dallas just signed. The speedster Victor Mete. And the steady Brandon Crawley shored up the London defense. This was a team that was so stacked that an NHL-drafted player, Cole Sherwood of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and a U-17 champion and all-star D-man, Evan Bouchard, couldn't make the lineup. Find me another team who could boast about keeping players like that in suits. And in net, Tyler Parsons. Going back to the Michael Hauser era of London, this team has looked for someone they could ride as their legit number one. Fans can recall the team flip-flopping with goaltenders like Anthony Stolarz, Jake Patterson, Kevin Bailey, but Parsons was the guy all season, all playoffs, and right through the Memorial Cup, despite backup Brendan Burke seeing some third-period duty in the Brandon blowout. Did he help his draft stock? Absolutely he did. Did he play for the powerhouse? For sure. But there were long stretches, especially in the final game, where he had to outduel Chase Marchand of Rouyn-Noranda, and he did just that. The last time this team lost a game was in April against Owen Sound. April 1st, that is. And that's no joke. And in the process, they took down Kitchener, Erie, along with the champions from the Q and the Dub. An outstanding season that cements this year's London Knights as one of the greatest junior hockey teams of all time. I'm Jeff Merrick. Welcome to Junior. And here we go, kicking off the last edition of the season for Junior alongside Sam Cosentino, who joins us each and every week here on the podcast. Sam now back, as I am, from Red Deer and the 98th Memorial Cup. First of all, Sam, how are you? And second, what did you think of the 98th edition?
Yeah, doing great. I didn't think much of the first five games, to be honest with you. You know, not really close, including that one big blowout in there. But as we got into the serious games with Red Deer defeating Brandon and eliminating the Wheat Kings, and then getting into the semifinal and, of course, the final, we had three awesome games to end it. So I was really, really happy about that.
Yeah, and you know, the whole talk of the tournament, and I mentioned off the top of the podcast here today, the London Knights, and they haven't lost a game. Going back to April, how Owen Sound managed to take two of them is remarkable. Good on Ryan McGill for putting that game plan together. You know, Sherip Sionov on the ice when the big line was out there. Jacob Friend was out there every time the big line was out there. But it seemed as if when that top line of the London Knights, whether it was Owen Sound, Kitchener, Erie, Niagara, Brandon, you know, take your pick, Red Deer, Rouyn-Noranda at times, when that big line wanted to freestyle and get creative, no one really had any answers for them. All playoffs long, Sam.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I think that their only two losses came in the first round. I don't know. It was kind of shocking to me that no one else, especially when you look at Kitchener and Erie, two top 10 teams for most of the year, and they weren't able to get it done. And then, of course, the Niagara Ice Dogs were playing really well. When they went into the league championship, they couldn't get it done. And then finally, here at the MasterCard Memorial Cup, you get two other league champs and a really good host team, and they couldn't get it done. So, you know what? Good on the London Knights. Good on Dale Hunter. They found a formula that worked. Obviously, that formula had a lot to do with the top line. But I think in goal, they were underrated defensively. I think on defense, they were underrated. And those two things really came to the fore, and it showed that they can, you know, beat you in any way, shape, or form, be it the physical game, be it the tight defensive checking games, or be it the high-scoring games. So it's pretty tough when you have an opponent and you're trying to play them one way or the other, and nothing really seems to work.
Yeah, you're right. That top line gets a lot of love, Tkachuk and Marner and Dvorak. But, you know, some good secondary scoring, Cliff Poo, Max Jones, Aaron Berisha, you know, J.J. Pickenich at times, you know, chipping in, Owen McDonald. I mean, this really was one of the more dangerous London Knights team we've seen going back to 2005. Of all the London Knights teams that you've seen, Sam, how would you rank this one?
Well, I think, and it's hard to say now, but I think the 05 team might have had a little bit more star power, but I think this is a little bit more of a, you know, and even that's hard to say because they didn't have the ridiculous scores. When you compare the 100-point scores, the 20-goal scores, there's a lot of similarities there. You know, they had the awesome goaltending combo with Adam Dennis and Gerald Coleman. And then this time around, it was really just Parsons. So there's not a lot different between the two clubs. I think it was a 59-win regular season, if I'm not mistaken, for that 05 team. And then the 17 playoff wins, if you include the Memorial Cup for this team. You know, each of them have different feats that are really difficult to come by. So there's not a lot separating them. And, you know, you look on and Parsons' career is still to be determined. You know, Adam Dennis went and played in Italy for a little bit, works for the Ontario Hockey League. Now Jared Coleman did get a couple of sniffs in the NHL, but as far as I know, has not been able to sustain any sort of professional career, at least in North America. So I don't know. It's going to be, I really think a lot of Christian Dvorak, I'll tell you that. And I love Mitch Marner. I think he's going to be a rock star. He's probably going to end up being similar to Corey Perry, you know, when you look at things down the stretch. So I don't know, Jeff. I think maybe 17 wins straight in the playoffs might be just a little bit more difficult than the 59-win regular season. But, you know, you can argue that one all day long. So at the end of it, to get circled back to your question, it's pretty tough to determine, you know, which team was better because they were so similar.
And the interesting thing about it, too, is, I mean, Dvorak's going to turn pro next year, so they'll lose him. They'll lose the overage guys. Obviously, Berisha's gone and Graves is gone. But, you know, as we talked about last time, if Mitch Marner goes back to the London Knights, and he even talked about that off air with us before we had him on the panel during one of the games, said, listen, I may be back here in London next season. You're looking at Tkachuk, of course, coming back. He's draft eligible. Jones and Poo and Mete and Yolevi. Would it surprise you at all to see the London Knights in Windsor next year, Sam?
No, and the only different path they're going to have to take is that they're going to have to be a league champion. It won't suffice just to win the Western Conference. And sometimes you get that situation when the MasterCard Memorial Cup is hosted in your league, you know, with the Windsor being a Western Conference team. They're going to have to go through the Spitfires, and they're going to be a dynamite team next year too. But there's no question that they should be competing for a very similar spot for a league title, and without a doubt for a Western Conference title. So, you know, it's going to take them one extra win than it might normally, although this is the same path that they walked this year and found a pretty successful path in doing so. Wouldn't surprise me at all, Jeff, if somehow they found their way back.
I want to get your thoughts on some of the other teams as well, and we'll talk about the host team. But before we do that, I want to ask you about the host city. That final game, you know, there wasn't a Western Hockey League team in it. Red Deer lost to Rouen. And the Brandon Wheat Kings bowed out after three straight losses. Yet it was still a rocking building, yet the building was still packed. What did you make of the crowds this year in Red Deer?
Most impressive maybe of any of the events I've been to, and the fact that you're not having a league participant play in the final. And the fact that they were cheering both teams. And, you know, they had reason not to, really. I mean, A.J. Greer was a guy that came out and basically said the Rouyn-Noranda crowd is better than the Red Deer crowd, so you think that him and his team would have been enemies. And then you have the London Knights, who, you know, ultimately went through the round robin and you know, beat Red Deer as part of ruining their perfect record that would have put them into the final automatically. So you would have thought that they'd be cheering against the Knights. But what was really cool for me is that they were just cheering for hockey and good hockey. And I was a big fan of that, especially the oohs and the ahs, the ups and downs. And at the end of it, really saluting both teams, especially the Huskies, for the effort they put forth in that final game.
You know, and the Red Deer Rebels themselves, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of their players. And I'm with you. I thought the crowds were outstanding. And I thought the entire tournament was, you know, so well run and so well organized. And Merrick Sutter and Brent Sutter and Connie did such a great job putting everything together. To a couple of those players and a couple of guys that really jumped out for me, I thought Connor Bleakley, considering everything that he's gone through by way of, you know, trade in the NHL, you know, Colorado essentially washing their hands of him, getting the C ripped off his jersey, you know, the injuries, the lower body, the wrist. I thought he was excellent. And Adam Haluka, this was the first time he comes in from that trade from Spokane. The first time I got a chance to watch Haluka up close and personal, San Jose Sharks prospect. What did you think of these two players at this tournament?
Well, it was good because I've seen both guys before, and Haluka was acquired for that very reason, to come in and to snipe, and you know he understood that that was his role. I mean, I think he did a pretty good job of that. And a guy who at times can play a rough and tumble style of game. There were some inconsistencies. I thought there were a couple of times in the tournament where he passed up some opportunities that otherwise he wouldn't have, especially for a shooter. But having said that, overall, pretty good season, you know, a year after getting drafted and being a late draft pick, I thought he played extremely well. When it comes to Connor Bleakley, I could not have been more impressed by what that young man has had to endure. Yep. On and off the ice, from the start of his career, being named captain at 17, having to undergo the flood situation in High River, Alberta, where basically him and his dad and the family had to kind of rebuild their home during one of the off seasons a couple of years ago. How much of a stand-up guy he is, and going through the injuries and the trades this year, I can't say enough about him. And I can't tell you what's going to happen. I would assume here that the Coyotes would accept a second-round pick in return for him going back into the draft. And if he does go back into the draft, he is going to get picked. He's going to be a late-round pick by somebody. But with all the adversity he's had to undergo here now at 19 years old, I think it's going to be a real good later-round pick for somebody. And a guy who's obviously been time-tested, who knows what the pressures of being a first rounder are. He knows the disappointment of not making the World Juniors, having the C strip from him. All of those things are going to be helpful for him down the road. You know, Jeff, you and I talk about this in the podcast all the time. I'm a huge believer in adversity, especially in a young man's career and how guys respond from it. And I could not have been happier for Connor Bleakley. He's a dynamite guy, has been a real good source for us over the last couple of years. And for him to bounce back the way he did was extremely impressive, especially coming back from that injury about a month early.
Yeah, it's true. Your thoughts on the other teams as well? We'll start with the Wheat Kings before we get to the Huskies. Not the most impressive performance that we've seen from Brandon. Safe to say we expected a lot more from a team that in a lot of ways was built for this year specifically. You know, this was the reason why Kelly McCrimmon turned down the Toronto Maple Leafs job. He wanted to come back for unfinished business, had a loyalty to these players because this is what the Brandon Wheat Kings program is building towards. And it couldn't have gone worse. 0-3 bounced after the round robin. Your thoughts on the Wheat Kings?
I was a little disappointed with their play, but Jeff, it's not something that we haven't seen before going to this event, where a team really does so many good things to climb the mountain of winning a league championship that they can't recreate the energy and the emotion used to do that. And I think that was the case for Brandon. I mean, it was pretty emotional last year when they got swept out and really didn't have a sniff against Kelowna. And everyone, to a man, came back. They bounced back and said, we're going to take that experience. We're going to learn from it. We're going to be better because of it. And they were. And even though that Seattle series was closer than what five games would indicate, they still came through it with those three overtime wins. A couple of good bounces went their way, albeit, but they still won. And they won that league championship. And maybe the emotional lift from winning that after losing it and being swept out of it last year was too much to come back from and get back to the Cup, because I don't think we saw the same team at the MasterCard Memorial Cup as what we saw in the regular season and into the playoffs. So it does happen, and it happens quite frequently at this event, and unfortunately it just happened to be Brandon this time around. But kudos on a wonderful season for Kelly McCrimmon's team, having won the league championship, the Edgenouth Cup, which is something they weren't able to get done before. And I don't know, maybe it opens up you know, a window again for Kelly McCrimmon to find National Hockey League employment.
We'll see. And, you know, you mentioned players going back into the draft and focusing on Connor Bleakley, the Red Deer Rebels. Looks like Reed Duke, Minnesota's going to walk away from him. So he'll go back into the draft this year as well. John Quenneville, New Jersey Devils prospect, first rounder, the goal of the tournament, maybe the goal of the year, Sam?
Oh, unbelievable. I think it was the goal of the year. And everyone was talking about Mitch Marner before, and I think that one superseded it. I really do. I feel that to be able to do that in the middle of the play, especially when your team's down, really takes a lot of guts, number one, and it takes a lot of skill to be able to complete it. And he was able to show both of those things in completing that goal. I just thought it was amazing that at that speed and to be able to show that kind of fortitude was a pretty awesome feat on his part. And I think for me, that's the goal of the year.
And it's interesting, too, because the team was losing. So you could tell that he wanted to celebrate, but it was kind of muted because he didn't want to do the big pumpernickel or anything because the team was still down. But I'm with you. That was the goal of the year, the best one that I've seen so far. All right, the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies. Good for this team for giving the London Knights everything they wanted and more, stretching them into overtime. Chase Marchand was outstanding. The blue line, you know, hampered after McDonald caught Myers to re-aggravate the groin injury. Timo Meier was exceptional. I thought that we finally saw, had a really good game from Francis Perron in the final. What did you make of the Huskies this time around?
They were awesome. There wasn't anything not to like about their game. And I think they came into the tournament and kind of played the perfect tournament where you get your win right off the hop and then you build on successes of your previous games. Even though they ended up losing, they're still able to build off of that. Their discipline became better. Chase Marchand got better. Francis Perron scored towards the end there in the semifinal and again was able to be successful in the championship. And their team was awesome. I mean, their coaching staff, unbelievable. Joey Perricone had some experience in the Western Hockey League before. And you just have to wonder, Jeff, I think the Philip Myers thing is probably the thing that will stick out in my mind for them, that he wasn't able to come back from the knee-on-knee. And I thought really that there should have been a call there. Of course, all this is in retrospect, especially when you look at 5 power plays to 1. So that would be the only thing there that they're probably saying, hey, what happened? Probably should have had better fate there, and not having Myers to be able to defend for more than half the game, I think, was a huge problem for them. But full credit, they did exactly what they had to do and were 4 minutes and 11 seconds away from getting it done.
So what's your main takeaway going to be from this year's MasterCard Memorial Cup? When you look back at, you know, the tournament that was Red Deer 2016, a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, what do you think stands out in your mind, Sam?
I think the organization. You know, there was no stone left unturned. Any issues that needed to be resolved were resolved quickly. I think the fans filling the building for every game, even when their team or their league wasn't playing, the way they responded in the final is definitely going to be memorable for me. And just kind of looking at the coming out party for Gilles Bouchard as a coach, who I think is going to be down the road here, you know, a guy that Hockey Canada is going to strongly consider for some big-time jobs. And then I look at, you know, Brent Sutter, which might be his walking, you know, into the sunset here with the, I have to wonder about whether or not he's going to continue his coaching career. You wonder if it's a springboard for Kelly McCrimmon, and his hockey, you know, and his hockey career, maybe moving to the National Hockey League now. So there's a lot of different things I'm going to take away, but I just think the overall experience, the fan fest, the crowd, the organization, and the fans are probably going to be my number one takeaway.
For me, it's a dinner you put together on the Thursday when there's no tiebreak game. When you organize a dinner for 12, fully catered, in our producer Jeff Gerdat's lovely suite at the Sheraton. That may have been the highlight, Sammy.
Well, I appreciate it, Jeff. And, you know, I like to get the group together because oftentimes in these events, you know, everyone ends up going their separate ways. And with no tiebreaker, it opened up a window for us to, you know, to kind of get together. And I think that's good, not just for our team building, but, you know, good times as well.
And you put together a nice little vegan meal for me, so I appreciate that, Sam. Hey, well, you guys all had a crab and steak. I want to get your thoughts before we let you go on a couple of issues around the CHL, non-Memorial Cup related, and they're both involved coaching. One in Niagara. This was a shocker. This happened during the tournament. As Marty Williamson was relieved of his duties as head coach and general manager of the Niagara Ice Dogs, which to me is stunning. He took the team to the final against the London Knights. Every year the team's in the playoffs, a new building is rocking. He's developing elite level talent, graduating it into the NHL. This one stunned me, Sam. How about you?
It did for me too, but it is understandable in that you had to see that the Burke thing was coming, and you have to think that both sons are going to be more involved than they were under Marty. Marty had the dual title of the head coach and general manager, so that's obviously a part of what's going on here. And I think when you look at the timing of it, it's going to be less pressure for the Burks to go in there and be those guys, because they're going to graduate a ton of players. They're going to have to make a couple of deals. They're going to have to go through the bottom part of the cycle again to get back to the top. And doing it under, and with people realizing this, it's going to be less pressure for that regime to be successful automatically. And I probably think that has more to do with the timing than anything else. But Marty's a wonderful guy. He's going to find a job in no time at all. And the thing is, had he been able to stick around in 2 years, he would have had that ship back to the top of the cycle again. And not many guys can do it the way Marty Williamson has done it. It shocked me. He's an unbelievable guy. You know, he's been so helpful and so generous with his time and his insights for us throughout the years, whether it be in Barrie or with Niagara. So I just don't think it's going to be long. He's going to be out of work. I believe there's still some time remaining on his deal, so that should allow him time to make a decision that's going to best suit him. Mm-hmm. And good for him, and rightfully so. He should be given a job that he can be picky and choosy with, because he's a wonderful hockey guy, and he's really good. He knows his craft extremely well. He's an unbelievable motivator. And again, I don't think it's going to be too long, but you can't say that at some point you didn't see it coming. Maybe just not this soon.
Yeah, I believe it's two more years left on the deal for Marty Williamson. So I don't think he chooses to be out that long, but you can be pretty sure that when he chooses to get back in, there'll be no shortage of teams that will look for his services. The other one, and this announced today, Jason McKee is the new head coach of Vancouver recently, of course, naming Glenn Hanlon as a new general manager. Your thoughts on the Giants, Sam?
Well, I kind of wonder why they didn't give Hanlon both jobs, to be honest with you. But, you know, the move to Langley maybe precipitated this somewhat, that the crowds and the revenue streams aren't going to be quite the same. Giving a young coach an opportunity, I think that's pretty cool. McKee is a guy whose name I heard come up about 2 weeks ago. I got a tip from some people in Vancouver that they might go down this road. I can't tell you that I know anything about him whatsoever, but to be able to come from the BCHL and make the jump to the CHL, I think it's good for him, and we'll just have to see how things play out. But I kind of surprised that they didn't give Glenn Hanlon both roles, because at least talking to the guys at the prospects game, they said he was really into it, and his video preparation and so on and so forth was top notch for an event that doesn't normally require that sort of thing. So I thought that general manager, great, but maybe he's going to be the coach too.
It's an interesting situation in Vancouver as well. Sammy, great job this season, as always. We look forward to the Combine, and we look forward to the NHL Draft at the end of the month in Buffalo. And welcome back to reality in some respects. Junior hockey is done for the season, so you have a modicum of a reasonable life until the draft, Sam.
Yeah, right on, Jeff. Great to be back. Look forward to working with you, not just at the draft, but at the Combine. And that should be a lot of fun, and get to see a lot of kids that we've seen all year.
Yep, look forward to it. Thanks, Sammy, as always.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
And from Sam Cosentino, we'll head to Rouyn Noranda, home of the Huskies, joined now by the assistant coach of Rouyn, Jason Forche. Jason, how are you today, sir? Thanks so much for doing this.
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure is all mine. First of all, before we get to the final game, congratulations on an outstanding season. The Rouyn Noranda Huskies, almost from wire to wire, were up there, almost ranked number one, and then number one in the CHL rankings. You didn't even hit double digits in losses in the regular season, had an outstanding playoffs as well. We're going to get to the Memorial Cup in a second, Jason, but when you look back on the season, the regular season and playoffs that the Huskies had, what comes to your mind?
Well, obviously a sense of pride. Very proud to have been associated with the organization and working with these players. It's tremendous experience. And I think just the amount of work ethic day in, day out that these young men put forth, the attitudes they brought to the rink, what a treat. It was a phenomenal experience.
And, when you look at this squad, the one thing, because I only got a chance during the regular season to watch your team, I think it was twice, maybe three times. The one thing that really stood out for me, and I think for a lot of people as well, and this is your bailiwick because you handle these guys, this defense, whether it was Lozon, whether it was Myers, whether it was Nicholas Briard who came in the trade with Quebec. I thought Caron had an outstanding season as well. I thought, you know, one of the main strengths, with all due respect to Chase Marchand and the forwards, one of the main strengths was this blue line. In your own words, because you work with these guys each and every day, how did you assess your back end?
Well, I'll still say it to, we were the best back end in the CHL, in my opinion. From top to bottom, we had 8 defensemen, and, you know, often we dress 7D during the season. And, you know, if you look at, basically throughout the course of the regular season, we had a lot of injuries. We had Lauzon missed 20-something games. Myers had missed games. We didn't have Briard to start. BC Denny, who didn't finish the year with us, obviously was injured in the Memorial Cup. But when Lauzon was hurt in the playoffs, he stepped in into a shutdown pairing and did a phenomenal job. Then you got Alan Caron, who, you know, is basically the sheriff. And I call Jacob Nebu the deputy because he'll be the sheriff probably coming in next year.
Well, the one interesting thing about this blue line, big, strong, physical, and can really move the puck too. But it's not a team that just grabs a puck and quickly throws it out of the zone. It's a team, and it's a back end that when they have the puck, they don't just look for the quick play, they look for the smart play. Going into this season, as you're coaching this blue line, how are you teaching these kids to look for the smart play and not just the fast play?
Well, I think that's a credit to our staff. Joe Bouchard is a good coach, and he really preached, you know, versatility. And I think myself coming in, I'm a big believer in the same thing. Yeah, sometimes you got to play north and just put it off the glass. There are those moments, but if you can put the puck on the tape to your forwards, you're going to make your whole forward group a lot happier. And I know from my experience, I probably wasn't the best skater or the hardest worker, so I was a lot more happier when my D put it on my stick. So that's our rationale, I think, for that part.
You know, it was such a fascinating Huskies squad. I was just talking to Sam Cosentino a second ago, and he made the point that, you know, the Huskies did it the right way when you head into this tournament. You know, get your first win out of the way, get it and build on it, but make sure you get that first win. Going into that Saturday game against Brandon, what was the strategy? What's the motivation? What was your goal heading into that one?
Well, being in charge of pre-scout, I had to watch a bunch of games, and, you know, we'd watched every team, myself and the goalie coach, Joey Perricone. He gave me a big help heading into the tournament, because it's a long task with not a lot of days in between. And Brandon was a team that we were very, very, very nervous, because they were such a strong team. They had phenomenal decor as well. We knew we had to come out hard. Obviously, it's the energy is going to be out there for the first game. We wanted to be playing in their zone. They had a couple things in their game plan that we recognized, but we got off to such a good start that, you know, for us, that was the perfect storm. We got up to a 5-1 lead. Obviously, it wasn't the best way we wanted to finish in the third, but, you know, when you're up 5-1, sometimes you're going to have those momentary lapses.
What did you make of the play of Timo Meier? I mean, here's a player that when I watch him play, I say to myself, wow, this guy is really close to being pro ready. What did you make of the San Jose Sharks first rounder?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about him coming into the season. Obviously, I knew he was a draft pick, but then playing it, coaching against him, and then when he joins your team and you work with the kid day in, day out, you start to realize what an intelligent person he is. He's incredibly hardworking. He wants to be coached. He's not an arrogant kid that says, you know, I'm a first rounder, I'm great. He really has this mentality that I have a long way to go before I make it. I still have to keep improving. And it's a real genuine thing. So I think they have a real gem with Timo. And obviously the way he can play, his game's versatile. He's a finish your check, put the puck deep guy, or he could skate it in and go wide. He's got various different tools and a phenomenal shot. And like I said, being a very good, humble kid that wants to keep improving. And those are qualities that are going to be endearing to coaches.
It's so fascinating, too, that when you look at this tournament, you can make the point that the best power forward in the entire tournament is from Switzerland. I can't remember the last time, if ever, we said that, but there it is with Timo Meier. Elsewhere on your team, we made the point a couple of different times in the broadcast that the Ottawa Senators got themselves a steal in Francis Perron. Now, correct me if I'm wrong on my facts here. Did he not approach the coaching staff at the beginning of the season and said, I want to coach this team. I want to captain this team. I want this to be my squad.
100% accurate. We met with him at the start of the year. It was my first week in town, and I had heard about Francis Perron, that he was a good player and capable of doing excellent things, and he's probably going to want to be a big leader. The boys like him and respect him, and so we had our meeting with him, and it was basically no BS. It was just, you know, guys, I really think this team's going to be great. I love the boys. I think you guys have done a great job building this team. I want to be the leader, and I want to show you that I can be the captain and do right by the Huskies organization. It was that simple. And awesome. When a kid comes in that determined and just looks you in the eye and says, I put this on my shoulders and I'm going to try and do my best, well, I think the results are there.
You know, one of the guys that I really appreciated talking to over the course of the tournament was AJ Greer. And here's a challenging kid, you know, leaves college, leaves BU to join the Huskies, wasn't getting the ice time, kind of felt like the forgotten man at college. And he comes into, you know, mind you, he's from Quebec, but he comes into, you know, a different situation, a different dressing room halfway through the season. What was it like acclimatizing a new player like that? Like a high-end guy, he's a draft pick of the Avalanche. What's it like acclimatizing a player like that into your already powerful team?
Well, I think the good news for him was some of the players had already known who he was. We, you know, you hear the players discuss, what do we need for the deadline? What type of players are we going to need to make a run? And I think to each a man, everyone said, well, we needed a power forward type player. And so when word got out that AJ was coming, you know, I'm pretty close to the players, and I know from talking with them, they were thrilled. So they welcomed them open arms. And for us as a staff, we recognize that, you know, here's a player coming back from college. He'd been playing prep school. Prior to that, we're going to need to understand he's going to have some tough times ahead of him because it is a different game. His ice time is going to be different for sure, and the style of play is going to be very, very different. And perhaps like the NCAA is a little bit more quick and get pucks deep and 30-second shifts, and you know it's explosion from start to finish. It's almost more like playoff hockey. We figured when we got the playoffs, we would have a big impact player, but we had to nurture him back into the confidence and getting him to be the best player he can be. And, you know, he was a treat to work with. You know, I became close with him and just talking with him a lot. And he's one of those kids that loves the limelight. You know, he's going to be a phenomenal player for years to come. And I think he would agree, and I'd say it for him, this was the best decision he could have made.
You know, I want to conclude on this, and we spent a lot of time with you at the tournament this afternoon as well. Your thoughts on Chase Marchand, who turned in a fantastic season after being, you know, bounced around, waved a couple times. You had an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old to kick off the season. The 18-year-old left, and you took a chance on Chase Marchand, who played Victoriaville last year, has had some time with the Steelheads in the OHL. Tell us a little bit about, in your words, how you thought his season went and what he meant to the Huskies.
Well, his season is, you know, movie season right there. You know, it's Rudy Rudiger put into a season there where it's such a feel-good story for such a good kid and a good family that, you know, everyone is proud and the boys really respected him and believed in him. You know, nothing would have been possible if people didn't believe in him. And obviously the staff believed in him. But it doesn't matter what we think. It's always going to be an indication of what the players feel. They believed in him. They knew he can do the job. And he's a really good kid, a hard worker. And, you know, he's a bit of a late bloomer here. Well, you know, I think I would be surprised if somebody doesn't just give the kid an opportunity to come to a camp and basically, you know, let him put his chips on the table and see what he can do.
Yeah. He's that good, and we've seen it before with goaltenders that have performances like this. Jason, thanks as always. Thanks so much for stopping by the podcast today. Congratulations on a fantastic season. I know the last game didn't end the way you probably wanted it to. but nonetheless doesn't detract away from the outstanding season that Ruan Aranda had, and you're a big part of it. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
Thanks. Have a great day.
That is Jason Forche, the assistant coach of the Ruan Aranda Huskies. Coming up a little bit short, but still plenty to be proud of there. When we come back, we'll hear from the champion, Cliff Poo of the London Knights. Also, Warren Reichel, the co-owner and general manager of the Windsor Spitfires, as Spits host the Memorial Cup next season. We'll be right back.
Poo, just too far ahead of him. He would have had a breakaway. Poo's got it again! Shot scores! What a goal! 3-2 London!
Pleased to be joined now by someone we can call a champion, a Memorial Cup champion. His name is Cliff Poo. He is scheduled to be drafted this year at the NHL draft. He joins us now on Junior. First of all, Cliff, congratulations. And I want to ask you, where were you and what went through your mind as soon as Matthew Tkachuk toe-dragged the puck, took the snapshot, and ended it for London on Sunday?
Actually, I was pretty tired. I just had a shift, and I was looking down, and then I looked up and everyone was throwing their gloves in there, so I just decided to get on the ice and join the party.
And what an outstanding feeling that must have been as well. Although I would imagine, Cliff, that it must have been pretty anxious in that intermission leading into the overtime frame. You guys went through the round robin, you know, without much pushback from any other team. You guys dominated squads. What was the feeling in the dressing room heading into overtime?
I think I was pretty confident in our team. You know, getting to overtime was the hard part, I think. And, you know, I had faith in our team, and I'm just pretty glad we won the game. It was a pretty nervous time, but, you know, that just made the party even better.
You know, you've yourself on a personal note, I think really did yourself a lot of good through the playoffs, into the Memorial Cup, and into that last game as well. You know, it seemed as if every scout that I was talking to in Red Deer about prospects for the London Knights all came back to this one thing. I didn't know that Cliff Poo was this good. I didn't know he was this good a skater. I didn't know he was this good a centerman. How much good do you think you did yourself just in the Memorial Cup tournament itself?
I think as a team, you know, you try and go as far as you can, and we got a couple draft eligible guys on our team right now, and you know, it definitely helps playing into the end of May, and you know, every time you get out there, you just try and work your hardest, and you know, the farther you get, I think the better it is for yourself and your team. So you know, I'm just glad to be a part of it, and you know, now I'm pretty focused on the next few months.
And you're at the combine right now as we speak. How's it going for you so far?
It's been good. You know, it's pretty busy, but, you know, it's pretty fun getting to meet a lot of new people and a lot of new teams. So, you know, it's been a fun ride so far.
Now, take us through, Cliff, your family story, because it's an interesting one. Your father came over from China, I think, to Ottawa. And so, in a lot of ways, you and your family started hockey from the ground up, started essentially from zero. It isn't as if, you know, like Tkachuk, you were born into a hockey family. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, for sure. My parents, they don't really know much about hockey, or they didn't really know much. But, you know, when I was 3 or 4, I was a pretty crazy kid. You know, I was banging my head off the walls, just ripping everything apart. My dad put on hockey one of the nights, and, you know, it was the first time I ever think I calmed down. And, you know, I just watched hockey for a couple hours straight, and, you know, I kind of realized that I liked it. So, you know, I think that's kind of where I started, and you know, he just put me in the house league, and I think the rest is history.
And then you played with the Marlies, and unlike a lot of kids who will jump around teams, now mind you, it's the Marlies, which is in a lot of ways the Cadillac of organizations, you never went anywhere else. Like, you correct me if I'm wrong, but you started with the Marlies and you ended with the Marlies. You never went anywhere, did you?
Yeah, actually I started with the Markham Majors in my first year, Minor Adam, but
okay.
After Minor Adam, I went to the Marlies for 6 years, I think, and played under Paul Coffey. He's a pretty good coach. So, you know, I was lucky enough to have him, and it was a fun time.
At what point, Cliff, did you think that you really had a shot at this? Like, you really had a shot at, you know, getting to the next level, making it to the OHL, you know, finding yourself in a position where you're at the combine, poised to be drafted into the NHL. At what point did you think, I think I may have something here?
I think as a kid, you know, you don't really think about you don't really think about how good you can become, or like how hard it is to make it to the league. So, you know, I think I took kind of step by step, and, you know, getting drafted to the OHL was the first step. And then now I hopefully I can get drafted to the NHL.
How were you when you got traded from the Oshawa Generals to the London Knights? That was the McCarron deal, Dakota Mermis as well. You go to the London Knights in exchange. What was that like for you?
I think I was pretty disappointed at first, but once I kind of thought about it, I wasn't going to a bad spot. You know, London's London's probably the best junior hockey team or organization in the CHL, so I'm glad to be a part of it, and I think it worked out for both teams.
Only have a couple of moments left with you, Cliff, but there's one thing I do want to ask about, and it's not the handshake, by the way, because you've talked plenty about that. I want to ask you about your warm-ups, not on the ice, but off the ice. In Red Deer, one of the most fun that we had on set before the games was watching you guys warm up with the music and the dancing. And all.
Yeah.
How does all that come together? It's one of the more entertaining things we've seen.
Yeah, you know, we like to be pretty loose before the games. But, you know, Doug Stacey, our trainer, he runs our warm-ups. And, you know, we always have someone going in the middle. Some people like it, some people don't. But, you know, I think you guys saw the last game. I think it was Jonesy and Crawls. You know, they had a little dance-off. And it was pretty entertaining. You know, those two really can dance. And, you know, it's pretty funny watching them. And it's just fun to be a part of. And, you know, obviously they lighten the mood before the game. So it was just a fun thing to be a part of.
Are they usually the guys, Brandon Crawley and Max Jones, who jump in the middle first?
Well, Doug usually chooses someone, like, on a special occasion, whether it's their birthday or, you know, they're coming back from a suspension, something like that. So, you know, but those two are the most, I think they're the best dancers on the team. So they wanted to give us the one last show before the final. So, you know, it's pretty funny to watch.
Coming back from suspension, no wonder Max Jones is in the middle very often. listen, Cliff, best of luck the rest of the combine and best of luck at the draft and congratulations. You know, you missed out last year on Oshawa's championship, but you made good for it this year. And you go out as being a member of one of the best junior hockey teams we've seen in a number of years. Looks good on you, Cliff. Congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
And from a champion, we go to the man who will be hosting at next year's MasterCard Memorial Cup. Well, at least his organization will. But front and center will be the man they call Bundy as well. Here's Warren Reichel, co-owner and GM of the Windsor Spitfires. Warren, how are you today? Thanks for doing
this. Good, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure is all mine. I want to get to the Windsor Spitfires. I want to talk about your squad. I want to talk about the tournament next year. I want to talk about Rocky. But first, I want to talk about your experience in Red Deer as a team that hosts next season. What did you learn from, you know, the organizing committee this year led by Merrick Sutter? What did you learn from how Red Deer put the tournament together this time around?
Well, obviously, I was in Red Deer about, 15 years ago, and this was a whole eye-opener for me. I've had the pleasure to go to a few of these Memorial Cups since we bought the club. But, Merrick did a heck of a job. I mean, just the events surrounding, what people have to realize is it's not even about just the game. There's so many events in the schools and the surrounding areas. The whole town's entrenched in it. And Merrick did a great job, especially with the beer gardens next door, all the transportation. It's great. They did a heck of a job. It's just not a weekend hockey tournament, as we know. It takes so much planning and, positioning to do very well. But I realize one thing, that we're going to have to do a heck of a job next year for the Memorial Cup in order to do just as good as they did.
Well, you know what the most important thing is, Warren? As long as you make sure the media is well taken care of, then everything else will run smoothly. Just always keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, nice king-size bed, comfy transportation, steak dinner for sure.
Make sure we're all taken care of. So I'm curious as well. I remember talking to Brent Sutter last year, and he said, listen, I've already started to construct my Memorial Cup team. In your mind, when did you start to put together a team that you thought could be competitive in the year that turns out is going to be your Memorial Cup year?
Well, our team, we have a really good base returning. All our defense returning, our two goalies. But as soon as we got awarded the Memorial Cup, we really started thinking that, hey, we have to be all in. I just don't want to be the host and shake hands. We want to try to win. So we start right from there. The trade deadline in the OHL opens up tomorrow, actually today. And, we'll be actively doing something here. But it's little piece by little piece. And then we have to reassess inventory when it started. But everything's geared towards that team next year. Obviously, the import draft is big for our club, too. And, very exciting time at the NHL draft with the three first-rounders. So we're going to build it piece by piece. Obviously, as you know, we have till January 10th, the trade deadline, to solidify our lineup. So some can get done in the summer and some can get done as the season goes.
You know, your squad is so fascinating, too, because you've turned out, you know, three elite-level first-round players. You know, Sergachev's going to be there, Stanley's going to be there, Brown's going to be there. On the one hand, it's wonderful that you've produced these players. On the other hand, going into Memorial Cup next year, is there a concern that a couple of these guys don't come back to junior hockey?
Well, it never was, but as you know, you're on the pulse of, you know, the NHL draft as you're going to the combine and things like that. And, you know, I'm hearing some things where maybe it doesn't look too favorable, but, you know, hopefully we have our fingers crossed. But as you know, in the salary cap world, they like to bring in the young stars that only take a $1 million hit against the cap. So a little bit I'm more worried of now, but, you know, the NHL is a big jump. We know how good the league is. People out there, fans and hockey people know that it's a huge jump and only a special few can make it, the Eichels, McDavids, stuff like that. But you do never know on a team that picks a player and what they have in store. So my fingers are crossed in that regard.
You know, Logan Brown is fascinating to a lot of people. At around the halfway point of this season, I think pretty much right around the time you made the Lemieux trade and you put him on the line with Logan Brown, his game just went to another level. He, along with a couple of other players, probably considered the biggest fast risers in this year's draft. When you look at his game at the end of the year as opposed to the beginning of the year, what do you see, Warren?
Oh, it was a 180. I mean, at the end of the year, I saw an assertive guy that, really shot the puck, took the puck to the net. And when you get that 6-7 frame going to the net with skill, it's pretty hard to defend. And I think that's what a lot of NHL teams are looking at. He was more of a pass-first guy and still is. But, you know, with Rocky's tutelage, you had to tell him that you got to start shooting the puck and backing some people off. And when he started shooting the puck and he had the Fisher-Lemieux line, it was a pretty good line. You know, things started happening for him. You know, assist is just as good if it goes off the goalie to another player just as well. And he was shooting the puck and being assertive. And I think he really got himself in shape the second half with some added weight training too, which helped pop in his legs.
He's an outstanding prospect. I want to close by asking you about one more, and that's Mikhail Sergachev. First couple of games, I remember talking to Rocky about him, and he said he kind of felt a little bit lost, maybe a little bit of homesickness. And there was that game against Mississauga where Rocky essentially just said, go out there and play your game. You know, don't forget about, you know, playing Windsor Spitfires hockey, but go out there and play your game. And I think he had two goals and an assist that game. And ever since then, he's had the rocket attached to his back. How do you assess his season?
Well, I really you know, obviously it was a little bit of culture shock, but the biggest thing that Misha did when he came in, he warmed himself to Windsor, and he came to us and says, what do I do next? The English is phenomenal, as you'll see when you speak to him. He speaks really good English. He works out. He interacts with his billets. He interacts with the community. He's not like, you know, many of us think like an old, sad Russian. He is Canadianized. He wants to do well. He wants to be the best. And his attitude's first and foremost. But when he got shooting the puck and he's got all the shots from the point, obviously 20 goals back there, you know, he really impacted the game and he got confident. And he's regarded as a leader in our room, you know, between our guys, even though he doesn't have a letter. A very assertive, very good guy, fun-loving. And I think when he meshed with his teammates and he got confidence, that was his big rise.
He's an outstanding player. Listen, on that, we'll let you go. Warren, thanks so much for doing this. Best of luck this offseason. We look forward to catching up with you next year in your MasterCard Memorial Cup year. Thanks, Warren.
All right, Jeff. Try to get some rest. Bye-bye.
We'll try. See you, pal. And there you have it. That's our program. Thanks so much for joining us on Junior of the Season. The London Knights, congratulations. They are your MasterCard Memorial Cup champions. Want to congratulate the President's Cup champions, of course, in the QMJHL, the Rouyn Noranda Huskies, the Brandon Wheat Kings, the Edchenouth Cup winners as champions of the Western Hockey League as well. Thanks to everyone involved in this program, including our producer, Sam McKee, our executive producer, John Grigg. Want to thank everyone who joined the podcast every week. It's Sam Cosentino, lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet. We'd like to thank Jason Forche, the assistant coach of the Rouyn Noranda Huskies, Cliff Poo of the London Knights. Congratulations, Cliff. And best of luck to Warren Reichel, the co-owner and general manager of the Windsor Spitfires. The Spits next year will host this great tournament. On behalf of the entire staff, the entire crew at Junior, thanks so much for listening this season. We're back next year with more CHL talk. Junior returns on these airwaves. Thanks for a great season.
Sixth sense of memory runs through.
You've been listening to Junior, the podcast for CHL fans. Find us at sportsnet.ca. Even better, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.